This is the Oanda Podcast.
Well, you're listening to the Oanda Market Insights Podcast with me, Johnny Hart, where we review and preview all the big business and market stories of the week with Oanda senior market analysts from across the world. And today it is Ed Moyer, who is in New York. Good afternoon from London, Ed. How are you doing?
Fantastic to be here. And it's great to close out this wild week with you.
The pleasure is all mine. And of course, it is the first Friday of the month. That can only mean one thing. It's non-farm payroll day. I know how much you love non-farm payroll day. Looking at the numbers, the US economy saw an increase in hiring as restrictions eased, although fewer jobs than expected. 559,000, and that was, of course, driven by reopenings in restaurants and bars and hotels in particular. But that didn't quite reach economists' expectations. So how have markets reacted?
Well, I think this was quite the shocker. There's the consensus estimate, and as you highlighted, it was a miss. But everyone was expecting a higher number. The whisper number was closer to 800,000. And I think when you take that into consideration, there was also some high hopes that the dismal April reading of 266,000 was going to get significantly revised higher. That only got a bump up to 278,000. So I think you're seeing the market, for the most part, you know, really getting a reality check here as far as, you know, how quickly this labor market's recovering. And it goes to show when you take a look at the price action, treasury yields tank, the dollar seemed poised for a rebound, and it quickly gave up all those gains and turned negative because we are still nowhere near substantial progress for the labor market recovery. And what does that mean? The Fed is going to remain ultra accommodative a little while longer. And while, yes, the economy is improving, jobs are coming back, it's going to be a messy labor market recovery. And that's just going to really, I think, kind of delay all these taper talk plans. And right now you're seeing, I think, a market that is now repricing their expectations for when the Fed will seriously discuss tapering and then eventually do it. And then that's when you start the countdown to interest rate hikes. So it looks like the rest of the summer is going to be, more just waiting for a further confirmation that we're getting these jobs back. And right now the hole is still about 5 million jobs. So we need to recover 5 million jobs before the Fed can really start to get closer to actually tapering. So, I think once they kind of recover another 3 million or so, then you're probably going to have the conversations really intensify. So it seems that we could have a couple more months of just wait and see. So that could bring us the doldrums of summer trading for us.
We have a saying here, Ed, one swallow doesn't make a spring. And yes, these figures that we see each month are quite unreliable, aren't they? Sometimes they're higher or lower than expectations. And then you go to the next month and we're back to square one. We have, as you said earlier on, seen two disappointing months recently. But maybe we should wait one more month and then we'll have a real good idea as to what's going on.
Yes, that's true. But we have to remember, too, all the surveys that we've been getting from businesses, there is a shortage problem for hiring. The unemployment benefits, they're going to start to go away. So you're going to see the pressure. The red states have been pretty quick to end the extended unemployment benefits. And that's going to really kick in June. So you're going to see that people are not going to be getting those extra hundreds of dollars into their bank accounts. That's going to motivate a lot of people, especially the lower paying jobs. But if you take a look at, you know, the ISM surveys, businesses are struggling to get talent, and you're going to see that be weight. That's going to translate into wage pressure. But I think companies are hesitant to increase wages because you really can't go backwards. So it is going to complicate, I think, the recovery. So I think you're going to see that investors are, you know, everyone's going to be expecting, and well, June is going to be much better, especially because you have the ending of these extended benefits. But we're still nowhere near where we thought we would have been a couple months ago. I think at this point, people were really anticipating that we would have increased the labor market by at least 2 million jobs. And, you know, in today's report, we saw the participation rate drop. So it's going to be a lot harder than people anticipate. And I think the other key thing that is really delaying optimism is we're seeing infrastructure spending talks continue to drag on. And the longer Biden takes to finalize a deal, you're going to see that's going to have a weighing impact too. So I think I'm still optimistic that the labor market's going to bounce back stronger over these next few months, but I think it's going to be a much slower pace than the market has been hoping for, and that's going to mean we're going to have to deal with a lot more dovishness from the Fed over these next couple months.
Interestingly, we have the same problem here about the supply of labor and hiring of labor. The main excuse or reason they're coming up with over this side of the Atlantic is the fact that post-Brexit, a lot of the European labor went back home and hasn't returned because of COVID and so on. What's the reason for that labor problem in the US?
Some of it is because people, a lot of families and most households, you know, both heads of households work. And with children, you really can't fully work with the younger children, that is. I think you're also seeing that because of the, I think, a snapback that we've seen in the service sector, you're having a pickup with millennials going back to work, but a lot of the boomer generation, some have retired early, some have not, are not willing to go back to work until it's worth their while, I think that you have the younger and the older people who are just it's not coming back as quickly as people anticipated. So I think there's certain factors there, in the end too, we have a chip shortage, which has really derailed a lot of manufacturing jobs and have prevented some hiring. So there's other factors too impacting that, I think that as we get past those problems, as far as the chip shortage goes, I think you'll start to see a greater improvement in the short term.
Okay, let's move on to another story, Ed. Now, talk about a roller coaster week for the theatre chain AMC. Stock prices dropping from record highs. And in fact, AMC warned its investors that they'd be better off staying away. And meanwhile, the other so-called meme stocks continued their volatile runs. Now, looking at the roller coaster numbers, they doubled on Wednesday, AMC. Then they dropped, I think, 18% on Thursday. How is AMC doing right now?
Oh, well, of course, AMC is rallying.
Naturally.
Yeah, naturally. The company is considering selling more shares, and to the novice stock trader, typically when a company announces they're going to sell shares, you're diluting the amount that is out there, so your share prices typically go down. In this case, this has been viewed as in the meme trading world as just good news, because AMC is going to have more money to do things. It is fascinating to see how the company, who had only 100 million shares, is now going to have over 500 million shares, and you're seeing stock prices closer to the mid-50s. Where your typical analysts, when you're let's say we didn't have this meme trading sensation, AMC would probably be trading around $10 or less. It was a short squeeze. It was then followed by momentum. People just the AMC apes. They found this as their next mission. We had GameStop really lead the charge in end of January, and now this is AMC's time to shine, and you're having investors all over remain committed to trading AMC. And what's interesting is hedge funds, money managers, they're now taking part in this, and they're happy to help pump the stock, and they don't care, you know, how high it goes. They're momentum trading right now, and then when it comes crashing down, they're buying options, and or they're using the options market because it's very liquid to just capitalize using that extra leverage on both the up and down swing. So it is likely to remain in place for some time until we have a different story for U.S. stocks, which, you know, continue to hover around record highs. I mean, if you take a look at stocks for the last couple months, it's been really range bound. So I think you're going to see this wild, wild west trading remain in place because the retail trader is committed, and you know they're buying options, you know left and right, and you're going to see that. I think that was apparent across Bed Bath & Beyond, GameStop, Costs. There's a handful of stocks that they're trying to do this, and I mean, obviously we've seen this movie. It's not going to end well for a lot of retail traders that are just going to anticipate that, you know, AMC is going to go to $100 or even higher. I think that you're probably down the road going to see the SEC kind of address this type of market volatility. This is not healthy for your typical investor. So it's the wild, wild west. And I think you're going to see that this type of trading, though, is really drawing lots of comparisons, I think, to the dot-com bubble. But I think what's different is that when meme stock trading blows up, it's going to be an isolated incident. I don't think this is going to have a broader impact on the S&P 500 and the rest of the major indices. I think that right now, in January, that was a different story because that was affecting liquidity conditions in the financial system. Brokerages were struggling to operate. They were undercapitalized. That's not happening right now. So I think that this would be an isolated incident, but it's the wildest trade right now, and it shows no signs of easing just yet.
Talking of more roller coasters, it's a real trip to the fun fair, the fairground this week. We've had some interesting cryptocurrency news as well. Elon Musk has tweeted a meme which implied he's breaking up his relationship with Bitcoin, and that's had an effect, obviously. I don't know if you saw the meme. He's shared it and said hashtag Bitcoin and a heartbreak emoji. This is a long way from the stock exchange that my father took me to when I was about 8 years old in London, when you had chaps in top hats. This is a million miles away from that, Ed.
I think the tweet last night, I saw it and I had to retweet and comment. It was surprising. I think that everyone was on standby. They were waiting to see, you know, exactly what is Tesla doing? What is Elon Musk doing? He's talked about working with Dogecoin developers. And obviously you saw, you know, Bitcoin come under tremendous pressure. Actually, it was across the board. All the cryptos were selling off. I do think that him tying in Linkin Park was pretty comical, but I think, you know, cryptocurrency and investors were not laughing. I think the uncertainty as far as what Musk is doing with Bitcoin is really aggravating a lot of these retail traders. But I think what's interesting, though, is you're starting to see, though, a lot of these other crypto supporters become very vocal. I think that you're probably in this environment going to, you know, quickly find out whether or not retail throws in the towel or not. And right now, I mean, it does seem they are adamant to maintaining their long-term bet on Bitcoin. I think a lot of people took some relief from Justin's son, his tweet just saying that he's willing to buy, you know, all of the Bitcoin that Musk sells. I think that you're starting to see that you know, there are still a lot of people that believe this is the future, and they're ready to double down. When you take a look at what's happening on corporate America right now, that's just on standby. No one is embracing cryptos right now. I think you're going to see in these next couple months major progress, probably in Bitcoin addressing the ESG concerns. More importantly, I think you're going to see the Fed is going to announce, the U.S. government's going to come out with more guidelines for their digital dollar, which will, you know, really translate into what Bitcoin's regulatory hurdles that are coming. But I think there is optimism that Bitcoin will be able to survive both those events, and I think that is why you're still seeing prices, you know, hover, you know, in that mid 30,000 level. I think you're in for an extended consolidation here. Obviously, if Tesla decided to dump all their Bitcoin shares, you know, I would anticipate 30,000 would break. But we need to have more clarity from Elon Musk. Is this like a high school breakup when you quickly get back together in the next week or so? We'll find out. But I think Musk is definitely providing some unnecessary swings for Bitcoin.
Right. I think we've got a bit of time left to talk OPEC, Ed, before we talk about next week. Oil jumping to 2-year highs this week. What's happening with OPEC?
OPEC Plus, they had a surprisingly easy meeting on output. I think that everyone, for the most part, was anticipating a very strong debate over whether or not you were going to see some countries make that push for we need to raise output. The global crude demand outlook has really improved dramatically as Europe has turned a corner with COVID, and as the U.S. driving season is kicking off, and there's strong signs that people are booking vacations, car rentals are hard to get a hold of, car sales are even more disheartening as people are paying $5,000 above list price. There is a ton of driving that we're going to see, which is probably going to support, I think, the demand outlook for throughout the entire summer. And OPEC Plus easily said, no, we're going to stick to our plans to raise production in July. We're not going to tweak anything. They really aren't ready to discuss anything beyond July. And I think the reason is because no one has a handle as far as what is going to happen with Iran. I think the nuclear deal talks, you know, this is entering a pivotal stage for them. And Iranian output could increase by 500,000 barrels in the next two quarters, or a million. And if, let's say, talks stall, you know, we and Iran has no sanction relief, that is not the base case, but it is a growing risk, and that could even mean oil prices could surge another 5 to 10% if we don't see this nuclear deal revived. So there's a lot that people are, OPEC Plus is waiting to see exactly what happens there. But for now, it just seems that we're going to have a tight market as the oil demand outlook improves. You're going to see that stockpiles continue to draw down. And yes, OPEC has a lot of spare capacity, but I think that, we're looking at higher oil prices for the rest of the year. I think unless we are surprised with a complete removal of all sanctions, which seems very unlikely, you're gonna see, I think, higher oil prices going forward. So OPEC Plus nowhere near giving us any reasons to be worried about oversupply or them bringing on more production than needed. And I think what's really been allowing OPEC to have this stance is because the Biden administration is not being friendly for U.S. production to increase. You're going to see, digging of oil in federal land is not happening. You're going to see U.S. production remain, I think, below 11 million barrels per day. And that is allowing OPEC Plus to really, I think, capture the market share when we start to see things improve over these next few months. So oil looks like it's going to continue to rise higher, as oversupply concerns are nowhere near being found.
Okay, Ed, before we let you go and enjoy your weekend, what should we look ahead to over the next week or so?
Well, I think the upcoming week we're going to see IAEA will have a meeting, and that is going to be critical for the Iran nuclear talks. I think you're going to see that is going to kick off on Monday. I think there's a lot of expectations that the world powers will reconvene on Thursday. That to me is the main event. We do have a few rate decisions that are important to watch. Bank of Canada is going to have a policy meeting. Now, remember, they had a very hawkish April meeting, so we're probably going to see them really not rock the boat, and I think you're not going to get much out of them, but I think they're going to just continue to emphasize the improving outlook for the economy. Poland is going to have a rate decision as well. They're going to likely, maintain record low borrowing costs. But, inflation is spiking there. So, the pressure to raise later in the year is growing. Raise interest rates, that is. And then on Thursday, everyone is going to, remain fixated on the ECB. The PEP buying is going to remain intact. We possibly see them be ready to lower it in the third quarter. And then also on Thursday, we have jobless claims and CPI. Inflation is the other big theme that Wall Street's focused on. And you're probably going to see a little bit of deceleration in that price growth. But it's still, everyone is concerned about pricing pressure. So that's going to be a big report. And then on Friday, we get UK industrial production, trade balance, always important to follow. And then also we have the Russian central bank rate decision. That's a live meeting. They could raise by 25 or 50 basis points. That's going to be closely watched as well. So it's a fairly busy week. You're going to probably see some traders to also focus on Chinese trade data and just seeing exactly how strong their economic recovery is going, how our exports and imports continuing to surge, and then also to pricing pressures from China. That could provide a little bit of a better indicator as far as global inflation. So busy week, I think you'll see that we'll probably get surprised with some other events, and I think the meme stock trading will remain wild next week.
Excellent stuff. Ed, thanks very much for joining us today, and enjoy your weekend.
Thank you. You too.
The Oanda Podcast.